Welcome to Journal Club with Happy. I'm your host, Happy Kasai, and I'm a graduate student at Vanderbilt University. This podcast is structured as a short scientific journal club where I'll discuss scientific papers and relate their major findings. Generally, journal clubs have a scientific audience ranging from undergraduate science students to primary investigators who run laboratories at academic institutions. And the communication during the sessions is of scientific jargon that is very niche to the field of study. For this podcast, I will try my hardest to use everyday language to explain science. It's not going to be easy, and you'll see me fail, but hopefully it gets better over time. I'm also a science student, so in this podcast, we learn science together. For this episode, I have picked another paper that was published in the journal Neuron. It was published in September of 2023. It's from the lab of Dr. Carlos Portera Caio at UCLA, and the first author of the paper is Nazim Kurdugli. The title of the paper is Improvement of Sensory Deficits in Fragile X Mice by Increasing Cortical Interneuron Activity After the Critical Period. When I'm reading scientific papers, I like to start by dissecting the title and recognizing some details. In this title, we see the mention of sensory deficits, interneurons, critical period, and fragile X. Let's go through them one by one and see how they are related and relevant for this study. Our nervous system allows us to sense our environment, process the sensory information in our brain, and react in some way. Now, some environmental stimuli require a fast reaction. For example, if we were to touch a hot pan, we quickly retract our hand and protect ourselves. We are adapted to protect ourselves from pain. On the other hand, some environmental stimuli are non-threatening, and over a short period of time, our nervous system adapts to the stimulus. For example, if a loved one touches our arm, we notice it for the first few seconds, and our brain recognizes it. But over time, we adapt to the touch to the point that our conscious thinking forgets that we're receiving some sensory stimulus. However, under some conditions, we may have sensory deficits. We may miss out on some sensory experiences and fail to adapt to non-threatening stimuli, like the touch of a loved one. One of the reasons why sensory deficits occur is neurodevelopmental disorders. Neurodevelopmental disorders are diseases that develop while our nervous system is organizing itself. The brain as an organ filled with multiple neurons organizes itself during a period of time called development. This development period starts when we're in the womb and lasts until our mid-20s. A lot of changes occur in our body and to our organs during this period. Now, a specific section of this developmental period is called critical period. Critical period is a time during development where the brain is most sensitive to environmental stimuli. It is a time of great learning and experiencing the world. During development, neurons migrate in the brain and form connections with other neurons so that they can communicate and serve a purpose. When groups of neurons in one region of the brain successfully form connections with another group of neurons in a different region of the brain, we call that assembly of neurons a circuit. Think of it like an electrical circuit that is installed in our house and provides us with electricity. There are multiple circuits in the brain. In last week's episode, we talked about dopaminergic circuits that start at the ventral tegmental area and extend to the three brain regions, nucleus accumbens, hypothalamus, and medial prefrontal cortex. But for today, we'll focus on another circuit. Today's circuit is located in the somatosensory cortex, which is the region of the brain that processes sensations like pain, temperature, and touch. So this is a part of the brain that receives input from our skin and processes that input. With that said, there are two important cell types in the somatosensory cortex. One type is the interneurons. These interneurons are nerve cells that communicate within the brain. They communicate with the other cell type in the somatosensory cortex, which are called the pyramidal cells. As you can imagine, they are called pyramidal cells because their shape resembles that of a pyramid. The communication between the two types of cells is inhibitory. The interneurons send inhibitory signals to the pyramidal cells, signaling them to decrease their electrical activity. For members of the audience that have some neuroscience experience, I will say that the interneurons are GABAergic. They release a neurotransmitter chemical called GABA, which is short for gamma-aminobutyric acid, at the pyramidal cells. This neurotransmitter chemical tells pyramidal neurons to decrease their electrical activity, and that is what we mean by inhibitory communication between the two cell types of the somatosensory cortex. One neurodevelopmental disorder that affects the circuit between interneurons and pyramidal neurons is called Fragile X syndrome. Fragile X syndrome is a genetic condition. It is caused by a single gene called Fragile X messenger ribonucleoprotein 1. Now, for today's discussion, the genetics of this disease is not important, but know that this gene is critical for brain development. Patients who have a mutation at this gene have delayed brain development and encounter learning disabilities. Children with this disease take longer time to learn how to crawl, talk, walk, sit, and multiple other skills. They also experience behavioral problems that include trouble making eye contact, anxiety, attention deficiency, and hyperactivity. Patients with Fragile X syndrome are also highly likely to be on the autism spectrum. So we have this neurodevelopmental disorder called Fragile X syndrome that affects the connection between interneurons and pyramidal neurons in the somatosensory cortex. And in this particular paper by Kerdugli and colleagues, we explore how an intervention in the somatosensory cortex could improve the sensory deficits caused by Fragile X syndrome. I would like to point out that this study was conducted in mouse models for Fragile X syndrome. There's a part of the results that contains human data, and I'll mention its source when we get to it, but unless and otherwise, all of the work was done in mice. I hope you have enough introduction to the topic at hand and identified the major question in this paper. Now I'll briefly discuss the methods that the authors used to answer their question. The authors of this study used a very clever approach to create sensory stimulation for the mice. They used a brush to stimulate the whiskers of the mice and used a very powerful microscopy technique called in vivo two-photon calcium imaging to measure the electrical activity of the interneurons and the pyramidal neurons. At some point in the near future, I'll have an episode that covers the technique behind in vivo two-photon imaging, but for today, I would like for you to think of it as a way to measure the electrical activity of brain cells in a living animal. With that said, let's go to the major findings of the study. What did the scientists find out? The interneurons located in the somatosensory cortex, which is the part of the brain that processes sensory information like touch, were less active in the Fragile X syndrome mice, which, to remind you, are the model mice for Fragile X syndrome. So these interneurons had less spontaneous electrical activity, and more importantly, the interneurons had less activity even when the whiskers of the mice were stimulated. The interneurons in the healthy group of mice had normal levels of spontaneous electrical activity, and that activity increased when the whiskers of the mice were stimulated with a brush. In both cases, the Fragile X mice showed less electrical activity in their interneurons. The researchers then investigated the activity of the precursor cells to the interneurons in younger mice and found that there were less active cells with less firing activity. Now here, by precursor cells, I'm talking about the nerve cells from the earlier stages of development that later become interneurons through the process of brain development. This lack of activity in the interneurons and their precursors indicates that they participate less in cortical circuits and create some deficit in the organization of the brain in the case of Fragile X syndrome. And that is exactly what the researchers observed when they looked at the pyramidal neurons of the cortex. I'll remind you that these pyramidal neurons receive input from the interneurons. In the case of Fragile X syndrome, the decreased activity of the interneurons prevents them from participating in the circuit with pyramidal neurons and fail to modulate their activity. As I've said previously, the input that pyramidal neurons receive from interneurons is inhibitory. I will reiterate what this means. interneurons tell pyramidal neurons not to fire or to decrease their electrical activity. In healthy conditions, higher activity from the interneurons will be matched with decreased activity of the pyramidal neurons. So there is an inverse relationship. However, in the case of fragile X syndrome, since the activity of interneurons is suppressed, there is less inhibitory signal received by the pyramidal neurons. Therefore, they will have higher electrical activity. The second result of this paper is that the effect of this suppressed activity of the interneurons and their precursors does not stop there. It also affects the survival of the interneurons themselves. This is a very common situation in biology. You may have heard of the analogy, use it or lose it. Although it's used to communicate another message, it can be applied to the case of the interneurons and their precursors. The body has programmed a process of cell death called apoptosis, and these dysfunctional interneurons undergo cell death in huge quantities in the case of fragile X syndrome. The researchers then did something that I find pretty fascinating about biomedical science. They looked at human brain tissue. As biomedical scientists, we study the disease in another animal, and when we find something new, we come back and check if it's also true in humans. When the researchers observed that there is massive interneuron cell death in mice, they checked to see if that is also the case in humans. By looking at human brain tissue post-mortem, which means after a patient is deceased, they found out that the interneuron population is also reduced in human patients with fragile X syndrome. So far, we've seen that the decreased activity of the interneurons affects their participation in circuits involving pyramidal neurons. On top of that, it leads to their death. Now the researchers ask the question, what happens if we artificially increase their activity? Does that improve their function and survival? To answer that question, they used a chemogenetic approach, which is a way of either increasing or decreasing the electrical activity of nerve cells by introducing designed drugs that act on designed receptors. The nerve cells themselves contain specially designed channels that are activated when specially designed drugs are present. It is a pretty cool technique in modern neuroscience. In later episodes, I'll cover how the technique works in detail, but for now, let's think of it as a technique to artificially increase the activity of neurons. When the activity of the interneurons was artificially increased using chemogenetics, their survival increased, and the mice had normal numbers of interneurons in their brain, which leads us to question if the increase in activity could also translate to their function in the circuit development of the brain. To answer that question, neonatal mice between the ages of 5 and 9 days old were treated with chemogenetics, and their responsiveness to whisker stimulation was observed in the pyramidal neurons. It turns out, there was no improvement in the pyramidal cells. However, when the chemogenetic intervention was applied in mice that were older than 10 days, that increased the responsiveness of the mice to whisker stimulation, and that also increased their adaptation to repeated whisker stimulation. At the start of this episode, I gave you an example of being touched at the arm by a loved one. Under healthy conditions, we adapt to the touch, but in the case of fragile X syndrome, patients fail to adapt to repeated non-threatening touch. From the results of this study, we find out that increasing the electrical activity of the interneurons in the somatosensory cortex improves the adaptation of pyramidal neurons to repeated non-threatening stimulation. The chemogenetic intervention involves a very invasive surgery procedure, and as always, a simplified approach to target a mechanism is always appreciated, and the authors targeted a specific potassium channel that is expressed in interneurons called KV3.1. This channel is voltage dependent and lets potassium enter the interneurons and prepares them for subsequent electrical activity. The pharmacological agent that targets these channels is AG00563. The name of the drug and its mechanism is not important for now, but fragile X mice that were treated with this drug had better interneuron to pyramidal cell circuit formation. In behavioral assays, the mice that were treated with the drug showed better adaptation to the whisker stimulation. Now, the timing of this chemogenetic or drug intervention is very important here. Logically, for neurodevelopmental conditions, it is better to introduce an intervention as early as possible so that the disorder could be caught early. However, in the case of Fragile X syndrome, the intervention worked better after the critical period. This makes all of us very hopeful because it shines light to treatment of Fragile X syndrome in late adolescence and adulthood. To summarize this paper, I will restate that increasing the activity of cortical neurons after the critical period improves the sensory deficit experiences in Fragile X syndrome. Those were the findings in this paper. I hope you learned something about neuroscience from this episode. It is basic science like this that evolves into great treatment options to diseases and disorders. I would like to congratulate the authors of this paper for their work. As always, I'll add a PubMed link of the article in the episode notes. Thank you for chiming in, and until next time, ciao.